That doesn't mean that the United States can't continue to lead on addressing emissions and emissions output in our country and help be a leader so that we can work with other countries who don't invest in emission control standards like we do here in this country and like we have over the last 25 to 30 years to reduce our footprint by a substantial margin.
If we're not part of the conversation, though, globally, and we're just going unilaterally, how is that leading?
Well, America is always part of the conversation, whether or not they're part of a structured agreement or not, because America's economic output and just economic engine will ensure that we're going to be part of the debate. And the focus has to be, too, on what America's done right over the last few decades, whereas other countries, close by to the United States, have not invested in emissions infrastructure like we have. And America needs to continue to lead, and we will, regardless of whether or not we're in a multilateral agreement that research has shown we would fall 35% short of our goals, even if implementing 100% of what the Obama administration wanted us to do.
What is the downside of staying in the agreement for us?
Well, I'm not going to debate an upside or a downside because it's not my decision. But what I can tell you is, as part of the Climate Solutions Caucus, somebody who believes in an all-of-the-above energy approach, I'm going to continue to tout technologies that are going to allow us to grow economically, which includes coal and also baseload generating facilities, and then also how we increase our amount of renewable energy as part of our overall portfolio. But we have to realize the facts are we cannot run America's manufacturing sector on renewable energy alone. We have to have baseload generating facilities. I have 3 coal-fired power plants in my district. I have a nuclear facility that has zero emissions that doesn't get any credit like renewables do for the zero emissions that energy output output is. And remember, the baseload generating facilities like those 4 plants are the ones that give us access to cheap power. They're the ones that allow large manufacturing facilities like the old Diamond Star plant to operate and be affordable to operate. Those are the facilities that we have to have as part of our portfolio, or the costs just to turn the lights on are going to go up for every single senior on fixed income.
Some economists, though, think that over the longer term, coal is not going to benefit all that much, even if we pull out, because natural gas and other forms are, over the long term, more economically beneficial.
Well, I would like those economists to go talk to the IBEW workers that work at our coal-fired power plants in the 13th District and tell them how they're going to economically benefit when their job no longer exists right here in central Illinois. And when we take those baseload facilities off, if companies aren't willing to invest in retrofitting for natural gas, then those jobs are going to go away and that power on the grid is going to go away and the prices are going to go up. And also, there's a lot of talk about converting old facilities to natural gas facilities. The question I always ask somebody who advocates for a complete elimination of coal and moving, and nuclear in many cases, and moving just to natural gas, if they support fracking or not. Because without fracking technology, we don't have access to affordable natural gas. So we're going to have that debate before we risk putting America's energy capacity on one source that countries like Germany have already done. And now Germany, because of decisions made years ago, have seen their cost for utility rates skyrocket way beyond what was estimated. And Vladimir Putin has become somewhat of a natural gas sugar daddy for the country of Germany. That's not a position I want the United States to ever be in. That's why we need a balanced, all-of-the-above approach that includes coal, that includes natural gas, and includes nuclear.
You had talked about the U.S. continuing to lead even if we exit from the Paris Accords. One of the counter arguments being put out there is that it makes it easier for other countries to leave the Paris Accords who maybe do need the structure of the accords to reduce their emissions.
Well, I've never been one to think that multilateral accords are necessary to make progress on a global scale. I would urge anyone who has concerns about emissions and emission controls to travel just 90 miles off our coast to the country of Cuba. It's 90 miles away from the United States, and the lack of investment in infrastructure because of the structure of government in the country of Cuba leads to zero emissions controls. Go look at the smokestack that is burning in the Bay of Havana that's burning straight oil. Let's invest time and energy to make sure that we have countries that don't have the capacity to invest in emission controls. Let's help them do so also, because the United States does not get enough credit for what we've done to protect our environment unilaterally over the last 25 to 30 years. Charlie, we've grown up in a lifetime where we saw rivers catch on fire because of pollution. That doesn't happen anymore. We've made tremendous progress in this country. And let's make sure we take some of the progress that we've made to some other countries like Cuba and help them too.